Senator Pogueniller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and Sergeant Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Rabbi Jared Sachs from the Temple of Israel in Minneapolis. And then remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
In Pirkei Avot, the ethics of our ancestors, we're taught that one who is wise is someone who learns from everyone else. One who is strong is one who overcomes his or her impulses. One who is honored is one who honors others. So in these closing days of the Senate, of this session, we ask that you each have the ability to be wise, the ability to be honored, and we ask for strength so that you can move forward, especially as civil servants, spending so much time away from your families and friends, and that you have the strength, honor, and wisdom that you need to be successful.
Turn around here.
Yes.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Very good. Very good. Yeah. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fishbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogueniller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wigger. Quorum is present.
Quorum is present. Senator Pogueniller, you got to go into the...
Do you want to do some of the...
Yeah, we can do some of the stuff. First order of business is executive and official communications. Printed on today's agenda. Next order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate files herewith returned. Senate file numbers 124 and 646. Signed, Elbany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 493, a bill for an act relating to public nuisances, providing that certain criminal gang behavior is a public nuisance, authorizing injunctive relief. Senate File 493 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Elbany Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Moi.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate file number 493 and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee and conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with like conference committee appointed on the part of the House.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following Senate file as amended by the House, in which amendments the concurrence of the Senate is respectfully requested. Senate File 802, a bill for an act relating to health, mortuary science, Senate File 802 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathews, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Senator Corrine.
Mr. President, I would so move that the Senate do not concur in the amendments by the House to Senate File 802, and that a conference committee of three members be appointed by the subcommittee on conference committees on the part of the Senate to act with a like conference committee appointed by the House.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
And, Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the House has adopted the recommendation report of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2096 and repassed said bill in accordance with the report of the committee so adopted. Senate File 2096, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for environmental, natural resource, and energy purposes, etc. Senate File 2096 is herewith returned to the Senate. Signed, Albany Mathews, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives. She can adopt.
Next order of business is the fifth order of business, reports of committees. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Next order of business, motions and resolutions. There are two resolutions printed on today's agenda. Without objection, they will be referred to the Rules Committee. Under motions, we'll go to introduction and first reading of Senate bills. There are three Senate bills printed on today's agenda. Without objection, first reading of Senate bills.
Mr. President.
Still on motion. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, members, here would be the order that we would proceed today, hopefully. I'd like to call for a recess now for 45 minutes for the majority caucus to meet. And then we would come back from that and take up the health care bill, omnibus bill. And then we would, I believe, I haven't talked with Senator Murphy, but I think we need to get back to the transportation policy omnibus bill. And I need to ask Senator Chaudhry whether he wants to take up the energy environment policy, Camille. So environment policy. So that would be the three items I think we would try to do today. So I would move, Mr. President, that the Senate recess to the call of the chair. And that should be about noon or so.
On the Pogemiller to recess to the call of the chair. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The Senate stands in recess.
The further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, and Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, is there, I think we'd like to take up the conference report on Senate File 2171.
That's correct, yeah.
That's at the desk.
Senator Berglund, do you have a motion to make? Senator Berglund, do you have a motion to make at the desk?
Mr. President, I move that the foregoing recommendations and conference committee report on Senate File 2171 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the conference committee.
Mr. President. Senator Sedgham.
Mr. President, I would move that the recommendations and conference committee report on 2171 be rejected and the bill be re-referred to the conference committee as formally contrived. Mr. President, that motion is based largely on, once again, a hope and a desire that we can come together, we being certainly the governor's office, Senate and House Republicans, along certainly with those in the House and Senate DFL caucuses. On a bill, on a Health and Human Services bill, Mr. President, this year that we know that can move forward. And I think it's fair to say, Mr. President, that this bill is probably destined for a veto. And I don't think, we don't like vetoes, the governor doesn't like vetoes, I don't think the people like vetoes. And our hope, at least in doing this, Mr. President, is that good people can come together in the spirit of Minnesota and can make this thing work, short of the red veto pen. So, Mr. President and members, we would, on the Republican side, respectfully request that this bill be, this conference committee report be re-referred, that it's opened up, that the governor and the respective conference committee members come together, work, put together a package which certainly can be approved, just as we did the other day. We know it can happen if the will is there, and that report then eventually come back to us, and we have a 67-0 vote on it. So, Mr. President, members, I respectfully urge your support on this request.
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President, I would request a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. For this bill. Senator Berglund, you can move to lift the call if you'd like.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings of the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant at Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. We're discussing the Senjum motion. It is a higher motion, so that's what we will be talking about or debating now. Senator Berglund.
Will Senator Senjum yield to a question?
Senator Senjum will yield. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator Senjum, I believe that there might be some concern with the level of new spending in the bill. In the current base budget, are about 26% of the budget for Health and Human Services. Would you believe that it would be fair if we got 26% of the new money to spend on Health and Human Services?
Senator Sanjiv.
Mr. President, Senator Berglund, you know, fair is a stubborn word, but as I read at least our sheets, this particular bill spends $355 million over the February forecast, $276 million over what the governor himself proposed, and that's obviously what makes it difficult. How do we do this, in fact, without brand new tax increases? And maybe that's what's in the package here. We don't know, of course, but what we hope to do is be able to send this back and get some of these questions resolved.
Well, Mr. President and Senator Senjum, if this bill was going to receive 26% of the ongoing money available without raising taxes, it would have received $299 million. It did not. In the ongoing target, it received $277 million. Then further, if we were going to receive one-fourth of the one-time money, we would have received $263 million in one-time funding. We did not. We received $66 million in one-time money. The number you see, the 355 on there, is a combination of permanent and one-time spending. So the number you really need to be looking at for ongoing spending, which I think is the concern here, is $277 million, which is less than what we would have gotten if we would have gotten our share of the budget out of the one-time money by $22 million. Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, further, I go on to say, how did the governor get his number for the bill he proposed to the legislature? He refinanced TANF. And that means that he took that money and used it for general fund spending instead of using it on the MFIP programs. He took federal DSH money that's supposed to be going to the hospitals. He used it for general fund spending. And he took Minnesota Care revenues that are supposed to be going for the Minnesota Care program and used it for general fund spending. And he did so to the tune of $184 million. Now, that is not honest budgeting. The Senate has approached this bill from an honest budgeting perspective. We have used the money that's been given to us in the various pots for what they were intended for. And in doing so, we still are under one-fourth of the new spending for our area of the budget. I think this is a responsible bill, Senator Senchum, and I oppose your motion.
Senator Senchum.
Well, thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Berglund. I have no doubt at all with regard to your passion in terms of crafting this bill and your experience and your knowledge in terms of putting the bill together. What is the bottom line, however, like it or not, is that this bill is probably not going anywhere. This bill is going to draw a veto. We all know that in this chamber, and many, of course, outside this chamber know that. And my hope is that, in fact, we refer this back to conference committee, that we work with the governor. We've got a couple of weeks left to do that, that we get a bill that's satisfactory to all concerned, and that bill's brought back here and that eventually adopted, and adopted with a strong bipartisan vote. Right now, that's probably not going to occur with this vote, or this particular conference report, and in a way that's sad because there's an awful lot of effort that went into it. But Mr. President and members, I would urge a positive vote on this motion to re-refer, and let's get a bill that, let's get a conference report that we all agree on. And Mr. President, I would ask for a roll call vote.
There will be a roll call. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator Senchum, if you took all of the governor's funny money in the bill here and added up, it's $184 million. If you add that to his permanent general fund spending, we're $133 million apart. Now, Senator Senchum, most of that money in this bill is going for long-term care COLA increases. Senator Senchum, I believe the majority of the people in your caucus believe that we should be spending more on long-term care COLA increases than the governor provided. So the question before us is not what we think will happen to this bill when it reaches the governor's desk. The question before us is this a responsible bill in terms of what the Senate wants to see in the bill? And I believe it is. This bill achieves the goal of increasing the number of uninsured who will have insurance by over 72,000. I think that's a goal that we all share. It gives nursing homes and long-term care providers a 3% and 3% increase in the bill. Senator Senchum, this is not about what the governor thinks. This is about what the members of the Senate think on both sides of the aisle. You can't have it both ways. Your side of the aisle offered a motion on the floor to raise the amount of money we're spending for long-term care. This bill does spend more than the governor, but you can't do that without spending more than the governor spends on the bottom line. Remember again, members, this bill does not even spend a fourth of the increased new money we have available to us. Furthermore, this bill is $40 million under our tails target. So there is no reason to believe that this bill will cause any future tax increases. Members, this is a good bill. We should be voting for this bill today, not sending it back to conference committee.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. If Senator Berglund would yield, I would like to ask her about the long-term care provision, because when it left the Senate, the increase for long-term care was 3.25, I believe, for next year, and it's coming back at 3% instead. And yet the total spending from the time it left the Senate to the time it left here, total spending on the bill is $110 million more. And so I'm wondering, if we reduce the amount for long-term care, what replaced that to cause the increase in the amount, the total amount that the Senate had earlier approved?
Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and Senator, one of the items that's not in the bill, that was in the bill when it left here, was the caps on health care spending. So that increased spending in the bill more than we had in the Senate version. And that was $31 million this biennium. We funded the long-term care COLA at the same level that the state employees' COLA is in the bill, and I believe that was always a goal of the Senate. So state employees are being funded at 3% in the bill also, including the long-term care provisions. So we're funding our nursing homes and our long-term care providers at the same level we'd be funding the state long-term care services.
Further discussion? Secretary will take the roll on the Senjum motion. Senate is under call.
Dill.
All senators having voted, secretary will close the roll. There'll be 22 ayes, 44 nays. The motion does not prevail. Senator Berglund.
Mr. President and members, and I'd just like to mention some of the items in the bill that were not in the bill when it left the Senate. I'm going to assume most of you remember the things that were in the bill, and if you don't, you can ask me questions about those things. First of all, we did eliminate the housing penalty in the MFIP program in our bill. This bill only reduces it to $25. We have a very, very strong provisions in this bill for work in our MFIP program. So we will more than meet the work participation rates that the federal government has set for us, and therefore we are no longer needing to forecast the increased state maintenance of effort spending that was in the governor's bill, because he would not meet those work participation requirements. There's a small workforce U program that is funded for Stearns and Benton County. In the area of child care, we funded the governor's initiative for quality improvement for providers and provided a 2% increase for providers through that program. We provided some funding to buy people who are waiting for the basic sliding fee program on the waiting list. We provided some additional child care grants that were not in the bill that went into conference committee from the Senate. We have a little over $2 million in funding for the crisis nurseries. That funding was cut in 2003. We have an American Indian Child Welfare Project expansion for the Red Lake Reservation, where they would then be taking over the administration of their child welfare system. We provide funding in here for self-directed support options for people with disabilities. We have more money in the bill for long-term homelessness than the governor did, and most of that money is in the homeless and runaway youth program, which will be receiving about $3.2 million in new funding. We have some additional funding for transitional housing, emergency service grants in the housing area. We've provided some money for the food shelf program. I know there was concern about trying to buy back some of the cut that took place to the community action agencies, and we do that in this bill. We have a small one-time tenant hotline funding. The governor's health exchange is in this bill. In the area of Coverall Kids, we compromised in the conference committee. And instead of creating this third new program for children to be enrolled in, we are creating a seamless transition between the children that leave Medicaid because they are over income. We leave them on that program for 2 months longer so that their eligibility can be determined for Minnesota Care, and then they move into Minnesota Care with a seamless transition. The premiums for kids up to 200% of poverty for Minnesota Care were reduced to $4. There is a primary care access pilot project initiative, which will have primary care physicians doing case management for high-cost disabled children. We delayed the treatment foster care program. We're not going to be receiving a federal waiver for that this biennium anyway. We eliminated a program that would come online in the future to increase rates for one certain type of autism program. For our dual eligibles, that means people that are on both Medicare and Medicaid and they're in the Medicare Part D program, they have no limit on the copays in that program today. In this bill, we will limit those copays to $12. In our own medical assistance and general assistance medical care program, we will reduce copayments on drugs from $12 a month to $7 a month. For those who are over 65 and are leaving the medical assistance for employed persons with disabilities, they will be able to keep their assets. We have restricted the special transportation broker role in arranging for special transportation in a limited part of our special transportation program. We have funded a health care payment reform pilot project. This is a program to try to reward providers who are in the primary care system, who are keeping people from entering the hospital, reward them for their efforts. What did we lose in terms of the health care program that the Senate took into conference committee? We no longer are paying for undocumented children to go into Minnesota Care. We no longer are providing for people with costs higher than 8% of their income on their employer premium to come into Minnesota Care. We continue the $50,000 income cap for Minnesota Care, and we were not able to preserve the feature. We had eliminated the four-month barrier for children to come into Minnesota Care to make it easier for them to get into Minnesota Care, and we were not able to keep that feature in our bill. Some of you have public nursing homes, and the employer contribution was increased in a pension bill last year, we fund that increase for the facilities so they can pay their pension costs. We did not eliminate Stearns and Benton and those group of counties from the COLA. They will receive the COLA as well as everyone else. There is a one-time addition of Chisago County to the metro rate for the nursing homes, and then that sunsets after the first year, and they will be in rebasing, and in rebasing they will be in the metro area. We added 100 slots to the MRRC waiver program. I guess there's about a 600 waiting list. The governor's mental health initiative was funded in the bill, and there were some grants that the House had that were combined into the mental health initiative, and that mental health initiative includes the $10 million he had for housing supports. There was a pilot program for some counties in the southwestern part of the state for mental health that was funded on a one-time basis. There was a children's mental health pilot project for MFIP clients that was funded in the bill as well. A hearing loss mentor program was funded. County repayment forgiveness for disabilities overspending is included in the bill. And one county was given a delay in repayment of that funding. Disability linkage line was funded. Pre-design for juvenile treatment programs were funded for both White Earth and Leech Lake. The Wilmer evidence program for meth was not eliminated, but Senator Rosen's pilot programs for meth treatment were included in the bill. The governor had an increase for home visiting. We did provide an increase of $8.8 million. The Minnesota Enable program was eliminated. The positive alternatives funding was left intact in the bill. So those of you who voted against it last time because of that provision should now be able to vote for the bill. Small amount of money for the heart disease and stroke prevention efforts in the Department of Health. Small amount of funding to restore the suicide prevention grants in the Department of Health. The Merck federal compliance was done in accordance with the Senate bill, but there was more money granted to the Mayo systems for phasing out, and that is $14 million this biennium and $5 million in the next biennium. There was an AIDS prevention initiative that was funded on a one-time basis to provide AIDS materials to be translated into other languages, so our foreign-born citizens will know how to prevent contracting AIDS. The governor's tuberculosis initiative was not funded in the Senate bill going into conference committee, but there is funding for it in the proposal coming back. In the area of lead and arsenic in the health department, we did fund increased swab teams for cleanup of lead. Our window provision did not survive, but we did increase funding for lead, and we provided some money for arsenic, determining the value that's safe for children of arsenic in their blood. There is one study that is funded here about the contaminants in water. There was one time $50,000 provided for minority and cultural health programs in the Department of Health. And then all of the health-related boards and the disability boards, the ombudsman, all of those were funded at the level going into the conference committee. Members, let me just talk a little bit about some of the really, really important things in this bill. I said earlier, but some of you might not have been listening, we came into the bill with about 56,000 more people insured in the next 4 years. I think the House came in with about 40,000 more children insured. And when we put the two provisions together and fitting it within the budget, because we did leave money on the bottom line in the Healthcare Access Fund so that we can make sure we're in the third biennium out going to be able to afford these programs, we ended up covering 72,000 more Minnesotans. That is really, really an achievement and something we should all be proud of and something that we should support here today by voting for this bill. Remember that every uninsured person in the state of Minnesota is adding to our health care costs. They end up in emergency rooms, the most expensive place they can receive care. Oftentimes from there they go to a hospital bed they wouldn't have needed. So getting more people covered through programs where they're paying premiums and getting their care in a primary care office is a very important goal for the state of Minnesota. Again, numerous governor's initiatives are funded in this bill. Many of the Senate priorities are funded in this bill, and some of the House priorities are funded in this bill. And again, it's done all without even spending 26% of the new one-time money available and hardly a drip of the one-time money that's available. So I believe this is a responsible bill. I take the responsibility of making sure that this budget can be funded in the future very seriously. The Healthcare Access Fund is a dedicated fund. We cannot and must not expect more of it than there is funding available for it, and this bill does not. It leaves nearly $40 million on the bottom line for future biennium spending of tails in the healthcare access provisions in the bill. We have used TANF money for the TANF program to restore cuts that were made to some of our poorest citizens in 2003. And then most of it is going for improving the work record of this program. Having more people be in work activities, having more people counted toward the work participation rate that the federal government has set for us. I think that is a positive feature of the bill. And then thirdly, the federal disproportionate share hospital dollars that come to us from the federal government that we finally last session figured out how to get the match for it so we could claim those dollars. In this bill, those dollars go to the hospital where we intended them to go and where the federal government intends them to go. It is not spent throughout the budget on other programs as the governor's budget did. I think those are three areas of this budget we can be very proud of. And so I urge the members of the Senate today to support this bill. And I would at this time, Mr. President, yield to my conferees who deserve a big round of applause because they did yeoman's work. We were without sleep many, many nights working on this bill, and we were a great team, and that includes Senator Coring, who was an ex officio member of our conference committee, who was there many hours with us also, and worked very hard and got many of the provisions that he was concerned about on behalf of the governor and on behalf of his caucus. Senator Coring.
Senator Coring.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. First, I want to start out by saying a big, huge thank you to the staff people that helped. The staff people are really the people that do all the heavy lifting around here, and the senators and House members kind of just get to talk a lot, but the staff members really work hard, and I wish I could name them all individually, but I don't want to miss anybody's name, so I'm not going to go through that. But I thank them on the Senate side and on the House side for their long hours of work. And I would just say that I personally think this is a good bill, a very good bill. It funds a lot of things, and for the people that were here for the last 4 years, you know that I've constantly been working for the last, this is the fifth year on the farmer depreciation portion of Minnesota Care, the add back, and finally, after this is the fifth year, finally, it looks like it's going to happen. It's in this bill. That's something that we've been working on. And then on Friday, I happened to go to the Team Challenge banquet over in Minneapolis and was so impressed with the Team Challenge banquet, Mr. President, members. And I was impressed with the governor's comments there. They were so eloquent, and he was so right. And I would just say there's money in this bill for Teen Challenge. The governor is extremely supportive of Teen Challenge, and there's money in this bill for a 65-bed unit, and that's a good thing. I also got a letter, and I left it over at my office. I wish I had it to read to you. I got a letter from a 17-year-old boy from my district who his parents kind of rejected him. And so now he's staying in the youth homeless shelter down here in Minneapolis. And he wrote to me to tell me how grateful he is to be able to have that place to stay and to be able to have a nice warm bed and to have three meals a day. And we fund that in here. So that's a good thing. We fund the veterans' homes, nursing homes in here. We fund the food shelves. The food shelves have been underfunded, and we're funding them for the biennium at $650,000. I don't think that's enough, but it's a good start. Because I will tell you, in my district, I can't speak for anybody else's, but the food shelf has become a place where a lot of people go to get their food. And so that's a good thing. The waiver for Minnesota Care premiums for military families, that's a good thing. It's amazing, Mr. President, when I talk, I'm kind of like E.F. Hutt, and I guess people listen. It's really quiet in here, and I appreciate that. The senior nutrition program has had an increase of $1.5 million. That's a good thing. The foster grandparent and senior nutrition, or the foster grandparent and the Meals on Wheels, didn't get an increase, but it's funded in here. I would have liked to see them have an increase. The governor's health care, the health initiatives are all in here, if I'm not mistaken, Senator Berglund. I think I'm just going to stop at this point and just say that this is a good bill. This takes care of people in this state, and I would really urge members to vote for this. The positive alternative grants are certainly restored back up to what they were, $2.4 million for the biennium. That's a good thing. Suicide prevention grants, $500,000 for the biennium. That's a good thing. There are so many good things in this bill, it outweighs any bad thing that you might have in your mind as far as I'm concerned. So I just ask you to vote your conscience. It's a good bill, and I just want to thank the conferees too, Senator Lori, Senator Lynch, Senator Dahl, Senator Yvonne Prettner-Solon. We had a few spats, but you know, one great thing about this place is we agree to disagree, but yet we're still friends. At least I'm friends with everybody here. Yvonne, I consider you a good friend. We disagreed, but at the end we're still friends. And so I appreciate all of you very much. And it's such an honor to serve with you and to put together a good bill like this. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Senator Lynch.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I would echo many of the comments that Senator Coring just made. And I also want to share that we had a joint press conference this morning to roll this bill out. And one of the questions that we were asked was, particularly as new members, what we were most pleased about in this bill. And I answered it this way. I said, there are two things. And perhaps the thing that I'm most proud of in this bill is that together with the House and the Senate, and I believe with the governor's office, we put together a bill that uses real money on real things for real people. This is an honest budget, as Senator Berglund noted earlier. It's within our means, it's affordable, and we can sustain it. Many of us came to this body committed to those very principles of using honest, transparent budgets. No more shifts, no more gimmicks, and it's not in this bill. The other thing that I'm really proud of is that, please, on both sides of the aisle, we cannot underestimate, I can't tell you emphatically enough, how many of the governor's initiatives are in this bill. It didn't happen overnight. In fact, it happened over a series of nights. But this is a good, comprehensive bill. And I want to speak about the conference committee, conferees as well. Lots of schools of thought in that conference committee. And I want every member in this body to know that his or her interests were represented at one time or another on that conference committee. And between Senator Coring, Senator Prettner-Solon, and Senator Lurie, Senator Berglund, Senator Dahl, was a well-oiled machine. And I'm proud of this bill, and I encourage everyone to take a long, hard look at this and support this bill.
Further discussion? Senator Berglund renews her motion that the foregoing recommendations of the Conference Committee on Senate File 2171 be now adopted and the bill be repassed as amended by the committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Further discussion, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2171, a bill for an act relating to state government, making changes to health and human services programs, etc.
Secretary will take the roll. Senate is under call. All senators having voted. All senators having voted. Desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 47 ayes, 19 nays. The bill is passed and it's still agreed to.
Mr. President?
Senator Pogemiller.
I'd like to move a brief recess for the purposes of appointing conference committees.
Okay. On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate's in recess.
Mr. President, do you have a privilege report at the desk?
There's a privilege report at the desk.
Senator Pogomiller from the Subcommittee on Conference Committees recommends the following senators be and hereby appointed as a conference committee on Senate File 802, Senators Coring, Berglund, and Moi. On Senate File 493, Senators Moi, Betzold, and Limmer. Senator Pogomiller moves the foregoing appointments be approved.
On the motion to approve the conference committee members, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails.
Did we do it there? Yeah. Mr. President, then I would move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
On that motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. A committee shall be in order. Senator Pogomiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to designate number 42, Senate File 1971, which is the omnibus transportation policy bill, and yield to Senator Murphy.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, do I need to make the motion again or just resume where we left off?
Mr. Chairman, I would
move that when this committee do arise, Senate File 1971 be recommended to pass.
Okay. Senator Murphy, on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think we've had a pretty full discussion on this bill. My understanding is there's a couple of amendments. I have one of your amendments, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to offer up the A-112 amendment.
Senator Murphy moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows, page 70 after line 6, insert. This is the A-112 amendment.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This is an amendment that was actually in our policy bill. It's an amendment of Senator Metzen's. Deals with the Lafayette Street Bridge on U.S. Highway 52. Just to ensure that the future construction of that new bridge is compatible with transit projects. I'll renew my motion.
Discussion on the amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Frederickson has a small technical amendment, but oh, here he comes. And I'll let him take over from there.
Senator Frederickson.
Mr. Chair, I have the A-63 amendment. I would move adoption of that amendment.
Secretary will report the Frederickson A-53 amendment, or 63 Senator amendment.
Senator Frederickson moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows, page 32, line 10. This is the A-63 amendment.
Senator Frederickson,
Mr.
on the amendment.
President, members, this is a technical amendment, grammatical amendment. I'm deleting the word such and rewording the phrase.
On the amendment, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion? Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman.
I have the A-109 amendment.
Secretary will report the Vandeveer 109 amendment.
Senator Vandeveer moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows, page 6 after line 25, insert. This is the A-109 amendment.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, we've done a number of bipartisan namings on this bill, and so I won't roll call this. I think what it does is it names 694, the Ronald Reagan Beltway. So we name it after former President Reagan, who, as we all know, led the U.S. to victory in the Cold War and led an exuberant recovery from one of the worst recessions in history and into the longest, one of the longest peacetime economic expansions in modern history. So I had a bill to do this last session, and I think this is an opportune time to do it. So I would appreciate your support.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and Senator Vandeveer and I talked about this a little bit before session had started here today. And folks, I would ask that you not adopt this amendment. The people who we are designating either bridges to be named after or highways, one's a Purple Heart, those are veterans. The rest of them are all people from Minnesota. I mean, Dallas Sams, Walter Mondale, and I just draw a pause at bringing in the national folks here and would ask that we resist adopting this.
Further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. Further discussion on the bill, Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-110 amendment.
Secretary will report the Wergen A-110 amendment.
Senator Wergen moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows. Page 33, after line 12, insert. This is the A-110 amendment.
Senator Wergen, on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, under federal law, and I believe Senator Murphy is well aware of this amendment, too. Under federal law, a milk truck, in other words, a bulk truck that's transporting milk, when it stops at a farm, has to pick up all the milk in one pickup for food safety precautions. And so they can't pick up half of the milk and go pick up the other half later on. And so they have to be exempted from road restrictions with that milk truck. And so currently in Minnesota law, they are exempted from load limits, but that expires on June 1st, 2007. So what this amendment does is take that milk truck exemption sunset out of law and allows the trucks to move from the producer to the point of sale with a full truck and not have to abide by the road restrictions, because in a lot of cases they can't, and in other cases it doesn't make sense to split up and go back to the next door farmer and making a complete trip and increase the cost of travel and transportation for milk production. And so, members, I would really appreciate your support on the amendment for removing the sunset for milk transports. Thank you.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, this amendment, I'm not going to ask you not to support it or to support it. I'm just going to tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to support this amendment basically because our milk haulers have no other recourse. And, if we had a 10-ton road system, had the money to build a 10-ton road system, this wouldn't be an issue. Unfortunately, it is. And if we want to continue to drink fresh milk in the state of Minnesota, we have to allow the things that are going on today to continue to occur legally. Oh, Mr. Chairman, I might also, I have to give the pro and the con. The con is this, is that you're not going to find a lot of your local road authorities jumping up for joy because we're doing this, because milk trucks, they are heavy, they do have an impact on the road, but once again, I think that's outweighed by the fact that we want people to continue to drink Minnesota milk and make sure that it's the safest milk out there.
Further discussion on the Wergen amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? Motion does prevail. Further discussion on the bill, Senator Bach first. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A-56 amendment.
Terry will report the Bach A-56 amendment.
56. Just gave a copy.
Do we have a number on that, Senator Bach?
A56. This was the amendment I had last week when we had this bill up.
Okay, why don't we wait? We got to look for that, I think, for a minute. There's a couple more amendments here. Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A108 amendment.
Secretary will report the Senator Vandiver's amendment.
Senator Vandiver now moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows, page 34 after line 25, insert.
Senator Vandiver on the amendment. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is an amendment that you've seen earlier this year. This is would require proof of residency to get a Minnesota driver license or Minnesota ID. Would require that the residency status be displayed on the license or Minnesota ID. Number three, would the licenses or ID must expire when lawful residency requires. And we've discussed this before, but Mr. Chairman, I would request a roll call on this amendment.
There will be a roll call. Three hands are on there. Seeing three hands. Senator Moi on the amendment.
Mr. President, I wonder if Senator Vandiver would yield for a question.
He will yield.
Mr. President, Senator Vandiver, I'm wondering if this amendment was introduced as a bill.
Senator Vandiver.
I believe, Mr. Chairman, Senator Ma, I believe it was introduced, I think, last year in the House and Senate. It is currently, I think, a practice that the department is doing, and I think the governor has suggested that it would be better if this was in statute instead of by rule, so that's why the amendment's here. But this was a previous bill, I understand.
Senator Ma.
Mr. President, what I'm Senator Vandiver is that it was not introduced as a bill this session. And members, you know, this is an issue that we ought to have an opportunity to look at and discuss in the Transportation Committee, as well as any other committee where it's pertinent. I have tremendous respect for Senator Vandiver and the good public policy work that he wants to do. And I think that we should give Senator Vandiver an opportunity to introduce this as a bill and have a discussion on it, and then we can make a decision on whether or not it ought to be included in a omnibus bill or should go on its own. But I think that usually we tease that it is Senator Tomasoni who actually only comes up with amendments without bills, and we sure wouldn't like to taint Senator Vandiver with Tomasoni-ism. So.
Senator Murphy, on the Vandiver amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll resist from picking on Senator Tomasoni here until he brings his amendment up. But Mr. Chairman and members, we did have discussion on something that was very similar last year. I would hope that folks would just vote no on this today. Senator Moi made a couple of good points. We've got a lot of new members here. They haven't heard the full discussion on this. This does have a fiscal impact of the state, and off the top of my head, I can't tell you what it is, but there is a fiscal impact. The other thing is that law enforcement was less than complimentary of this provision when we did hear testimony here a couple years ago. So, folks, I would just ask that you vote no, and if Senator Vandiver puts a bill together, we'll hear it next year. Thank you.
Secretary,
Mr. President.
Well, Senator Hand, before we vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I guess I just wanted to rise in support of the amendment, and I appreciate the fact that perhaps it wasn't a bill this session. I'm reading through it. It doesn't look to be very controversial, very complicated. It's simply saying that we want to get proof of identity and residency before issuing a driver's license. I can't imagine that's a very controversial provision. As Senator Vandiver said, it's something that is currently being done through administrative rule. I don't know that changing it into law would require any additional expenditures of funds. I think this is a good common sense idea, and we ought to vote for it.
Further discussion on the amendment. Secretary will take the roll on the Vandiver amendment. Now, yeah, all senators having voted desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. Being 25 ayes, 38 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further, now we're ready, Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A113 amendment.
Secretary will report the Bach A113 amendment. Senator Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Bach moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows. Page 51, after line 24, insert. This is the A113 amendment.
Senator Bach on the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, what this amendment does is it allows multiple units of government to form a airport authority. Under current law, we have provisions where a county can have an airport authority, where cities can have one. But there isn't a provision where multiple local units of government can come together under a joint resolution and do an airport authority. Now, the reason for this, members, is to allow a city to include some surrounding townships in the levy authority to help fund the airport. This was actually put in as a bill. It did pass out of the local unit of government. The local government committee was amended there. It was amended again in the tax committee and is actually on general orders here. But in the other body, they didn't do quite as timely a work as the Senate did. It was kind of a late introduction. So hoping that members will agree to put it into this bill so that we can keep it alive. I don't know of any opposition to it.
Further discussion on the Bach 113 amendment. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. President, would Senator Bach yield?
Senator Bach will yield. Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, maybe Senator Bach could explain Section 90 about the tax levy and what's going on with that in this bill.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, that is really the whole point of the bill, is that willing governmental units can go together and create this airport authority, and then they appoint members from each governmental unit onto an airport authority, and we give them the authority to levy across what more than just the city's airport. They then have the authority to levy, spread that levy across the other willing governmental units so that, it gives them a chance to maybe raise a little additional money, and it takes the burden down some for the primary owner of the airport, which is just about always a city.
Senator Fischbach.
So, Mr. Chair, Senator Bach, this would be a new taxing district, so to speak. And then I'm just wondering if this belongs maybe in the tax bill as opposed to in the transportation omnibus policy transportation bill.
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Fischbach, it probably fits in both places, but airports do come under the jurisdiction of the Transportation Committee, so I think it fits here. The problem with trying to put it in the tax bill is we have a joint House-Senate rule that says that you can't introduce subjects in the conference committee that wasn't originally in the bill, and I don't have a reference, I don't believe, to airports in the tax bill, so I think it probably fits here just as well in that airports are under the Transportation Committee's jurisdiction.
Senator Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Will Senator Bach yield?
Senator Bach will yield. Senator Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. President, and Senator Bach. Sitting in both the Transportation and the Tax Committee, I don't recall us having a debate or voting on special taxing districts for as offered in this amendment. I'm wondering if you can at least let me know when the hearings were and if there were actually votes on this proposal.
Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I don't have at my disposal the date that it was heard in the Tax Committee, but it was heard in there. It actually was amended in the Tax Committee because as the bill was drafted by the revisers, I specifically remember that it said instead of tax levy on line 3.34, it said mill levy. So I distinctly remember it being in the Tax Committee because we made some technical changes to it to improve the language to more closely reflect current law. I will get for you the date that we actually heard it in the Tax Committee, but it passed out of local government, was re-referred to taxes, it was heard there, passed out of amended, and then sent to the floor, and it's on general orders today.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I appreciate the response. It doesn't give me any further direction, however, about whether we, I don't believe we ever voted on this in the Tax Committee, but it only furthers my concern that this motion or the amendment here is not germane, Mr. President, and so I would seek a ruling on germaneness. This is a transportation policy bill, not a tax policy bill, and I don't think that this amendment is appropriate at this time.
Senator Black.
Mr. President, if it helps Senator Ortman any, my colleague, Senator Wergen, looked on her computer and it passed out of the Tax Committee on the 13th of April.
And Mr. President, I appreciate that, but I still challenge the germaneness of the amendment at this time. Mr. President, advice on the question of germaneness?
Yeah, Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, the statutes involved here that would be amended are completely different. 275.066 versus 260.0427. Okay. And we're talking about Bill number 2057, which never went through the Transportation Committee, Mr. Chair. It went to the State and Local Government Committee first and then through taxes on April 24. Perhaps a different date than was previously offered.
I'm not worried too much about the section of the law. Because clearly airports are underneath or part of Senator Murphy's committee's jurisdiction. Now, what I'm wrestling with, see, I believe all of that's germane. What I'm wrestling with is the tax issue at the end. Let me just say 95% of this, in my judgment, is germane. Now, I'm need a little more time to think about the issue of the tax policy that's in here. And that would be the only part of taxes in this bill. Is that correct, Section 90? Does anybody have any advice on that issue? Any more advice or...
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Yeah, I Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's fairly clear. 35.2 says substantially different subject. No, it's all transportation related. And it also says that it has to accomplish a substantially different purpose than the bill. And it doesn't. It's all transportation policy. It just happens to have, I don't know, three or four lines hooked onto the end of it. And I think that it's germane, Mr. Chairman. That's the way I would read it.
Advice, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, if I can refer to you to the amendment itself, the amendment talks of a commission, an airport authority commission, but nevertheless, it creates appointment rules, compensations, meetings for officers, process to increase the size of airport authorities, process to decrease the size of authorities, process to dissolve those, tax levies may be certified by an airport authority. It goes considerably beyond just a mere reference to airports, and certainly if airports were simply a transportation mode, that would be one thing, but it goes into much more than that, issues of local governing, political subdivisions, taxing authorities are all included in this particular amendment, one that did not even go to Transportation Committee, nor was it ever referred. And despite the fact that there may be references in word only regarding a mode of transportation, it goes considerably beyond just the mode of transportation in its reference. It goes into the establishment of powers and authorities on the commission.
I appreciate that, but I guess we have a little disagreement on that language.
Mr. President,
I think it is, Senator Ortman.
One final comment on this. Mr. President, Rule 35.2, a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different subject, which would be tax authority, or, and this is the more important clause, is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill to which it is proposed. This original bill is transportation policy, not authority to raise taxes or to generate revenues, and that's what's being intended here, is to create a substantially different purpose and an authority that does not currently exist under law, and that's why it's not germane.
You might like my opinion for different reasons, okay? I guess I'm troubled with the tax provision, and there was a way, Senator Bach, to accomplish, again, I go to what I said earlier, like 90% of this bill today, and then if you wanted to work the taxation.
Mr. President, I'd be willing to divide the amendment and vote on and withdraw Section 90 if that would help move it along.
That would solve the issue with the chair's opinion anyway. Would you be willing to withdraw your request for germaneness if he takes the money out or not?
Well, Mr. President, has he split the amendment into two?
Yeah, that's...
He should say what he's going to do.
Yeah, tell the body what you're going to do and see if they could withdraw or somebody would set it. He's going to tell you what he wants to accomplish. Your motion is still before us. Your motion is still before us, of course. Senator Bach, what would you do if...
I would move that the amendment be divided between lines 3.31 and 3.32, that we vote on the first half of the amendment, and then we not vote on the second half, Section 90. I would withdraw the second half, Section 90.
But Mr. President?
Now, Senator Ortman, if you're satisfied with what Senator Bach is trying to accomplish,
Mr. President,
you could withdraw your request or continue on.
I appreciate the efforts of Senator Bach, but I'm equally concerned about Section 88, which 2.14 through 2.16 authorizes the airport to create the taxing district in the first place, and I think that section would have to be withdrawn as well.
Well, Mr. President, I don't want to raise a stir here, so I'll just withdraw the amendment. Senator Ortman, you win.
Today. Mr. President, for now, I'm sure.
You won the battle.
Only for the present, I'm sure, Mr. President.
Okay, further discussion on the bill. Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, I'm on a roll here. I would like to offer the A48 amendment.
Secretary will report the Ortman A48 amendment.
Senator Ortman, you're offering the A-105 amendment now. Senator Ortman moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows. Page 13, after line 6, insert. Now, this is the A-105 amendment. Is that correct, Senator?
Senator Ortman, the 105 amendment. On the 105 amendment, Senator Ortman.
Yes, Mr. President, thank you. The A-105 amendment, members, is one that's been requested by the auto dealers in the state of Minnesota, and I think it's one that we should support. What they're asking is that if a vehicle is designated as a lemon, that we actually brand the title to the car so that it states it's a lemon, and that way everyone who might be in the chain of custody or ownership of this vehicle would then be on notice that it's a lemon. And so if we actually get the car from out of state, then dealers here will be aware that it's a lemon. The consumers here will then be notified because it will be branded on our titles. And I believe this is supported by the Department of Motor Vehicles as well. And I believe I've earned Senator Murphy's support, but I don't want to speak out of turn.
Senator Murphy on the Lemon Amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, this was, I believe that this was a bill that you were carrying for DVS and the auto dealers. Mr. Chairman, this is actually a good amendment, and we need to put it in the bill.
Mr. President, I hate that he's so surprised about that, but could we please have a roll call, too?
Okay, there will be a roll call on the amendment that we all agree on. Secretary will take the roll. Oh, maybe not. Get a couple more down. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary, you want to Senator Ortman? all senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 65 ayes, 0 nays. The amendment is adopted. Further discussion on the bill. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A-104 amendment.
Secretary will report the Hand 104.
Senator.
And this was labeled Senator Ortman's, is that correct? Okay.
Senator Hahn is moving to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows, pages 21 and 22. This is the A-104 amendment.
Senator Hahn on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This amendment deletes Section 37, which is on page 21 of the bill. This particular section changes the current law that requires a child restraint for ages 4 and under. And the change, proposed change that's in the bill would raise that age to 8. I think that the current law is adequate to accomplish the purposes that we intend, and I think that changing that to 8 is just excessive.
On the Hahn Amendment, Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman and members, I would I would hope that we resist the temptation to vote for this amendment. And actually, that that temptation shouldn't be that great. This is one of those amendments that is in the bill to help save lives and lower injuries, especially to that section of our population that doesn't know any better. I mean, kids that are going to be using child passenger restraints, they don't know any better. All they know is that they're going on a ride to Grandma and Grandpa's house, and they don't know how dangerous it is if they're in an automobile accident and they're not properly restrained. So all we want to do with this amendment is to make sure that those kids are well taken care of. Folks, this is a good section of our bill. It has bipartisan support in both chambers, and I would hope that it survives the day.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I think parents are qualified fully to determine the age that their children need to be restrained and how to do that. I think parents are cognizant of the dangers that are involved in riding in a car. I don't think that we need to pass laws mandating this particular provision. I think it's excessive. We don't need to do this, and I would urge to that we vote against this. And I'd like to ask for a roll call vote.
Three hands for a roll call in the committee of the whole. Three hands. I saw three. Senator, any further discussion on the amendment? Secretary will take the roll on the Hahn Amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote, secretary will close the roll or be in. 14 ayes and 48 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1971, Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have the A-111 amendment.
Secretary will report the Wergen 111 amendment.
Senator Wergen moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows, page 35, delete section 55. This is the A-111 amendment.
Senator Wergen on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'll be short and direct, and I don't expect Senator Murphy to jump up and say vote for it. So, anyway, members, this deletes section 55 of the bill, which is the graduated driver's license that I think takes decisions out of the hands of the parents and puts them in the hands of big government. It's the section of the bill that says your son or daughter can't take their cousins to school or their foster siblings or anything of that nature. I think parents are fully capable of deciding how many kids should be in the car. I just simply am asking you to remove this section of the bill. Thank you, members.
Senator Murphy, discussion on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and members, once again, I would hope that you would resist the temptation to vote for this. These provisional driver's license restrictions that we've been slowly putting on the books in the state of Minnesota for about the past 4 years is something that many states already do. This is almost identical language with several other states in the United States, all who have seen positive results from this. This program of graduated driver's license, provisional driver's license, has led to a better understanding of what that between one-ton and two-ton vehicle actually does when you're behind the wheel. We're talking about some of our youngest, most inexperienced drivers. Once again, folks, the statistics are clear. These are a very underrepresented portion, those drivers between 16 and 25. They're a very small portion of all the driver's licenses that are out there. They're not that many drivers, yet they accrue almost 25% of the fatal accidents. We need to have a provisional and a graduated driver's license program in the state of Minnesota that works. And we've slowly been building towards that end. This is another small step in ensuring that our youngest, most inexperienced drivers have, one, are paying attention when they're behind the wheel, and two, that they have the tools necessary to become good drivers once they get their the standard driver's license. So, folks, please just vote no.
Further discussion on that? We're going to Senator Boniff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, want to speak against this amendment. When we first heard this in the committee, the original bill said that there would be no other drivers in the car, and I spoke out against that because I thought it was important for the safety of our children that they be allowed to have one other person, even though statistics show that having nobody in the car is the most safe of all. But in fact, I thought that was too restrictive for our young drivers. I live in Minnetonka, and in the Hopkins schools, we had an early release one day, I think it was about 2 years ago, and a woman was working, and her daughter chose to take four or five kids in the car, and the music was on very loud, and she reached over to change the station, and people were yelling in the car, and they rolled over on a freeway. One person was killed, another was paralyzed, and we'll never walk again. It tore our entire school community apart. And so having seen firsthand, and I know many of you know those stories and have been involved in those tragic situations, but personally, watching the lives of those young people change, none of them will ever be the same, that I support this law, and I think that it's a good thing that we are taking this step.
Senator Tomasoni on the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I rise in support of this amendment. We should take this out of the bill, members. This is not only taking decisions out of the hands of parents. This is open season on our young kids. Think about this. Anytime they're driving down the road, whether they're 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, if they've got two or more kids in the car, they can be stopped. They can be stopped for any reason whatsoever because the policeman thinks that it's a 16-year-old with too many people in the car. It's open season on our kids. And once they stop them, they're stopped, and then who knows what happens after that. That's wrong. We should not be allowed to be picking up people just because they got a couple of extra people in the car. And, you know, That's a real problem as far as I can tell from this, but it's the end of double dating as we know it. Any of you ever go on a double date in your life? Well, this one ends double dating. They can't have four people in the car. And parents who are working. Think about parents who are working. Parents who are working and then need the kids to have a car to be able to drive to the baseball game or go to the soccer game afterwards, and the parents can't pick them up and drive them all over. This is another one. You can't pick up your friends and bring them with you to go to another game. If a kid who is 16 years old has one person in the car, makes perfect stops at all the stop signs, is driving exactly the speed limit, obeys all the laws, he can still be picked up, and he can lose his driver's license until he's 18. That's what this law does. That's wrong. That's practically harassment for these young kids as far as I'm concerned. And, you know, I think that what we have to do here is take this out of the bill because this has gone too far. This, our, our, our kids don't deserve this kind of treatment. This is harsh, and I think it needs to be removed from the bill.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I, too, agree with this amendment. And if anybody should be able to stand up and talk about this, I should be able to, because I have a 16-year-old who, I will be totally honest, he's a lousy driver. He's totally lousy. He's just like his mother. I was a lousy driver when I first started. In fact, I got in my first accident with my mother in the car when I was 16 years old. Now, that's pretty bad, but members, what we're doing here is government intrusion, and we are taking the responsibility away from the parents. And I think that is... But we're going down the wrong direction. Why don't we just put big old mattresses around these kids, make rubber cars? I mean, they are going to have issues. They're going to have problems. They have to live. They have to learn. Thank you.
Mr. Neville.
Mr. President, this was the bill that I authored, and I just want to tell you that since we had the debate on the Senate floor last time, almost every parent who's contacted me loves it. Although I have been challenged to a debate by some high school kids, and I think I'm going to accept. I need one partner to help me justify the bill with the teenagers. But Senator Tomasoni, this really applies to 16-year-olds. It doesn't apply to 18, unless they don't get their driver's license till they're 18. It's really a six-month restriction. Most likely, for almost everybody, it's going to be when they're 16. And so I'd like to keep it in the bill. Thank you.
Chaudhry, Murphy, and Jungbauer, and I...
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to provide a little background on this issue. Back in 1998, I was the original author of the graduated driver's license, or the provisional driver's license system. And we put that into law in 1998. And the debate that we are hearing today was the same debate that we heard before. And I'm just here to stand up and support the provisional driver's license system, and it's a very important reason why. Because motor vehicle crashes are the number one cause of death of kids aged 16 to 19. It's the number one cause of death. So what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do when the teenagers whose high school classmates are getting into car crashes and dying over things that should never have to happen? So we created this provisional driver's license system so we can help kids get more practice following the rules of the road. Now, I do have to correct a statement that Senator Tomasoni said, that a kid will lose their driver's license if they violate this provision. That is not correct. Under the provisional driver's license system, under no circumstances do you lose your driver's license. In fact, current law says that if you get 3 moving violations in 6 months, you will lose your license. Current law is harsher than the provisional driver's license system. What we're doing is offering a gradual increase of practice for young drivers to help get them the practice and experience they need to follow the rules of the road. That is the point of the graduated driver's license system. So when we're talking about wondering how teenagers feel about this, yeah, you know, when I talked to them about this, introducing this law, they said, why? Why are you picking on us? And I said, I'm not picking on you. Actually, we're creating a better system than we have now, where you would just lose your license if you had 3 moving violations. And I think that the teenagers are absolutely cognizant of the fact that they could lose one of their classmates in a car crash at any time, because it is the number one cause of death. Now, when I said these things in 1998, people stood up on the floor and attacked me, saying, Chaudhry, you don't have any kids. How do you know how it is? You don't know how it is to legislate on issues that affect kids. Even though most parents, like today, really want this. Well, fast forward 9 years later, and this, believe it or not, this is not, I'm not overcoming the laws of physics. I have four kids now, and two of them are of driving age. And I'm here to tell you that my opinion has not changed one bit. In fact, it's gotten stronger. If a 16-year-old driver, if we've got a 19-year-old driver, I want them to have this graduated driver's license system so that they get experience in the rules of the road. Look, we've got radios, we've got iPods, we've got navigation systems, we've got higher speed limits than any of us ever had when we were growing up driving. There are so many more distractions that it's very important that we reduce those amount of distractions so that we can save lives. And remember, we're creating a system here where you don't lose your driver's license. It actually has an incentive to follow the rules of the road. So I would oppose this amendment. I would support the provisional driver's license system. Senator Neville, if you need help debating this, I'm happy to join you. We've got all the statistics we've ever need, particularly the statistics of the high percentage of parents, 70-80%, that support having this rule.
Hear from Senator Jungbauer, then we're going to vote on this one. Senator Jungbauer.
Well, is it Mr. Chair? No.
Chair.
Mr. Chair. Members, it's interesting to hear these arguments about government intrusion because last time I checked, the government issued driver's licenses. You weren't born with one. So I think it's a government's job to come up with the rules of how you learn these things. And having done 21 years of youth ministry, I find it very interesting that the only laws our teenagers know are the driving laws. And it's phenomenal, members, that they know what they can get away with, and they will argue with mom and dad. So as Senator Neville said, every parent that I've talked to about this loves this rule. It's another 6 months of them being able to think about it. And for those members that want their kids to have a full car right away, well, guess what? Mom and dad, pack yourself, the spouse, the rest of the family members in and help your child learn an extra 6 months. I oppose this amendment. It is good policy for the government to help our kids have all the time they need to learn how to be safe drivers on the road. Thanks.
Okay. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. President, or Mr. Chairman. Senator Neville, this is for 16-year-olds, but the point of the matter is that if a police officer sees who he thinks is a 16-year-old with three people in the car, but that person is 19 years old, he can stop them. And he can say, oops, I thought you were 16, but now that I've stopped you, well, let's check some other things. And that is harassment as far as I'm concerned, and that's what this bill does. It allows police officers to stop anybody who's young-looking anytime they want to, and that is not right.
On the Oregon amendment, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. A further discussion on Senate File 1971. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A107 amendment.
He will report the Tomasoni 107 amendment.
Yes, that'd be fine.
Senator Tomasoni moves to amend Senate File 1971, the third engrossment as follows, page 22. This is the A107 amendment.
Senator Tomasoni on the amendment.
Mr. President, I'd like a roll call.
Three hands. There will be a roll call. Senator Tomasoni.
Mr. President, this amendment deletes Section 39 and Section 85. They're both related to the primary seatbelt law. Members, we have a seatbelt law in the state of Minnesota. There's nothing that I can say here today that would indicate that I don't want anybody to wear seatbelts. I want everybody to wear seatbelts. We have a law that requires everybody to wear seatbelts, and in fact, the seatbelt use in Minnesota has gone way up. And it's in the high 80% right now, and that's a really good number as far as seatbelt use is concerned. The only thing this bill does in front of us right now is allows police officers to pick people up who don't wear seatbelts, and it increases the fine by up to $73. Members, we have a seatbelt law. It's not necessary to give police officers another reason to pick people up. They have about 400 pages, Representative Murphy, of reasons to pick people up in our statutes already. And in fact, when they do seatbelt stings, they do the clicker ticket operation that they have that they do across the state. They've picked up as many as 2,300 people in one weekend for seatbelt violations without having a primary seatbelt law, which means they can already do this if they want to, because they can actually do anything they want as far as reasons for picking you up. And they don't need the seatbelt law to be another reason to do this. Members, a long time ago when the secondary seatbelt law was passed, the legislature made a promise that they wouldn't increase this to a primary. We don't need to go to a primary seatbelt law. Please vote for this amendment, members.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and I would hope that people not vote for this. What we have going on in the state of Minnesota in regards to seatbelts, having it as being a secondary offense, is one of the worst public policies that this chamber, I believe, has adopted since I've been here. And you have to understand, it was adopted before I was here, the seatbelt law, but just let me tell you what this means. Senator Tomasoni, our compliance rate is not in the top 80s. It's right now barely 83%. Used to be 84% compliance. We're one of the few states that is backing up. We're going in the wrong direction. It's time that we make the use of seatbelts a primary offense. In other states that have went to a primary offense, they found that the percentages of people who are belted will increase sometimes by as much as 12%. In the state of Minnesota, we're hoping that we can increase seatbelt usage and get us into the 90s, 91, 92, 93%. If we do that, folks, we're going to be saving between 30 and 50 lives in Minnesota in 1 year. Every year, we will have saved 30 to 50 lives. Now, Senator Jungbauer just talked about kids are pretty smart, and they know what the rules of the road are. And I do believe that one of the reasons why we see such a high fatality rate for those younger drivers, even though that there's not that many of them out there as compared to the rest of us who are age-challenged, that they know this. And one of the disturbing things, and everybody in here does this, we go to our high schools and we talk to them about whatever. I go to the high schools, and 2 years ago I tried to hit everyone in my district and talk about driving safety. And one of the things I brought up was, you gotta wear your seatbelts. Those four things that lead to fatal accidents, one of them is you don't wear your seatbelt. Now, when I talked to the kids about that, they went, yeah, that's fine, but we can't get pulled over if we're not wearing it, so, you know, who cares? I was amazed. And it was not only that they knew that we had kind of a double standard when it comes to seatbelts, but they were willing to leave the seatbelt hanging on the hook instead of putting it on, just because the law says we're not going to get pulled over. Now, Senator Tomasoni, Congressman Ellison wrote us all a letter. I'm sure you got one. And Congressman Ellison said that, and it was very clear, he supports primary use of seatbelts 110%. Now, there's been a lot of issues that have come up around this. One of them was racial profiling. The congressman said he, along with the rest of the Congressional Black Caucus, don't buy into that. This is not racial profiling. This is about trying to keep people safe in their vehicles. And the reason why we want to go to everybody in the vehicle is because sometimes those folks in the back seat aren't belted up and the people are in the front seat. And when you hit an immovable object at 60 miles an hour, everything that's in the back seat is going to go through the windshield. And guess what? As those people in the back seat are flying through the windshield, they're going to take body parts off the people that are belted up in the front seat. And now the people in the back seat that have turned into missiles turn into deadly missiles. Not only are they more than likely not going to survive being thrown out of the car, but the chances of them killing somebody else that may be belted goes up. Folks, there's a million and one reasons to vote for this. It saves lives is the biggest reason. Also, people who are belted in, the total cost of their hospital bill is about 75% less than someone that's not belted up. Just think about it. If you're belted up and you're in a crash, you're going to stay right where you're at. Hopefully, you're driving a model car that has side impact bags or airbags, front airbags. But none of those safety systems work if you're not buckled in. If you're not buckled in and the airbags deployed, you're going to get seriously hurt. If you're not buckled in, you don't have those safety systems, you fly out of the car. That's just the way it is. And people driving pickup trucks and four-wheel drive SUVs, they risk a lot more in even the simplest of crashes. Because once those cars turn over in those SUVs, people break their necks. That's just the way it is. Folks, we got to wear our seatbelts. We got to start bringing that compliance rate into the 90% instead of falling behind. So let's just take a tough vote here today. Let's vote against the Thomasoni Amendment. Let's vote for saving lives, period.
Secretary will take the roll on Thomasoni. Senator Dill.
Mr. Chairman, members, 14 years ago, in 1993, I introduced a bill here in the Senate to make not wearing your seatbelt a primary offense. And at that time, I couldn't get that bill out of the Transportation Committee. I tried amendments on the Senate floor, and twice Senator Speer, our president at the time, ruled my amendment non-germane to the Omnibus Transportation Bill. And once in a while, I did get a vote. But I tried for 4 years as a chief author of amendments and bills to try to get a primary seatbelt law passed. Then in 1996, Senator Foley got elected, a highway patrolman. And since he was a member of the majority, he started to chief author of the primary enforcement seatbelt law in 1997. And somewhere around then, there he gave me a few keychains and buttons and stuff to promote seatbelt use, which I have in my desk drawer right here. And I decided I'd leave them there until we finally got this bill passed. And Senator Foley tried year after year after year, and we couldn't get the job done. We sometimes passed it in the Senate, but couldn't get it passed in the House. And now Senator Murphy's picked up the issue and has aggressively moved it forward. And I would hope that in the year 2007, 14 years after I first tried to do this, we could be successful for the very same reasons that Senator Murphy so skillfully articulated. And the number one reason is to save lives. As a Republican, we usually don't like regulations. We want to minimize regulations and laws and so forth. But the way I look at it, you've got to look at the cost-benefit relationship. And here's a very simple additional regulation, additional law, which will increase compliance by 10 percentage points as evidenced in many other states. And that translates into 30 to 50 lives saved per year. Just a very small inconvenience, a little small additional regulation with a huge benefit. It's clear we should vote against the Thomasoni Amendment and finally, in the year 2007, adopt a primary enforcement provision for our seatbelt laws.
Secretary will take the roll on the Thomasoni Amendment. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll or be in. 23 ayes and 40 nays. The amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 1971. Seeing none, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Murphy that Senate File 1971 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator
Pogamiller. Mr. President, I'd like to designate number 51, Senate File 1312, the Omnibus Environment Policy Bill. Take one more crack at that today.
Before that, the chair will designate Senator Moi to chair the Committee of the Whole. It's good, you know.
Senator Chaudhry.
Madam Chair, do I need to make a motion? Madam Chair, I move that when the Senate do arise, Senate File 1312 be recommended to pass.
When the committee do arise, Senator Chaudhry? On the file, Senator Chaudhry, on Senate File 1312, Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam President. I've got the A26.
The Secretary will report the A26 amendment.
Senator Chaudhry moves to amend Senate File 1312 as follows. This is the A26 amendment.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is an amendment that strikes the Section 27 that members were discussing last week that some members had some problems with, had a chance to discuss this, and I have agreed to just simply move to strike this section. I think there is a there's a lawsuit pending. The Supreme Court is considering this issue, and it probably makes sense to revisit this issue once the Supreme Court makes its decision either way.
Any further discussions on the 826 amendment? All those in favor of the 826 amendment signify by saying aye. All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. Any further discussions in Senate File 1312? There being no further discussion, the question occurs in the motion of Senator Chaudhry that Senate File 1312 be recommended to pass. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails.
Madam Chair.
Senator Pogamiller.
I'd like to move a brief recess to the call of the chair. Just be a couple minutes.
All in favor of the motion say aye. All those opposed say nay. Motion prevails. The committee is in recess.